good to be back at the Council on Foreign Relations. As Pete mentioned, I've been a member for a long time and was actually a director for some period of time. I never mentioned that when I was campaigning for re-election back home in Wyoming.
And I am delighted to be here in these new headquarters. I have been often to, the mothership in New York City, but it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have as far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
World government is the structure necessary for global justice.
First, we Americans are going to have to yield up some of our sovereignty. That's going to be, to many, a bitter pill. Pat Robertson has written in a book a few years ago that we should have a world government, but only when the Messiah arrives. He wrote, and literally, any attempt to achieve world order before that time must be the work of the devil. Well, join me. I'm glad to sit here at the right hand of Satan.
Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. We're going to fight them off. A United Nations army couldn't hold us back. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
Hey, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my conversation with James Wesley Rawls, talking about the threats that we're looking at for America and some things you can do to prepare. Enjoy the show. And I know that you said you're not on here to sell books, but I'll tell you what. The Patriot series is going, if you read that series, it's going to make you think about what would I do if I'm in this character situation. And it's also going to give you a picture of what the streets of America look like that you may not have considered before. And, students of history that have looked at the horrors that of an economic collapse in Weimar Germany or Zimbabwe or Argentina, they can tell you it really, really does get ugly. And I think you did a great job in that series of trying to translate what that looks like in America, because we haven't really seen anything like that in America other than the Great Depression. But, you know, at that time, as we discussed earlier, you know, most people live, 90% of the population lived on a farm, and now it's 90% of the population lives in a metropolitan area. And there was so much more goodwill in the Great Depression that we don't have now. They are great books, and they're really, really good for getting those creative prepper juices going.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Mark. If people want to check them out, and even for your listeners who are on a limited budget, most of my books were bestsellers, so a lot of libraries have them. Again, my family name is Rawls. It's R-A-W-L-E-S. Just visit your local library and see if they have the novel Patriots or any of the other novels in that series. And I think what people will find is, as they read them, most listeners find that the books, even though they're exciting novels to read, are essentially survival manuals dressed as fiction. I tried to squeeze a lot of practical, tactical tips into a fictional storyline.
And at the top of your list on the Quick Start Guide, you recommended prayer. Is that the most important step in preparedness?
I think so. I may be biased as a Christian, But unless you're right with God and in covenant God, in covenant with God, you can't expect God's covenantal blessings. So start there. Get right with God. If you haven't accepted Jesus as your personal Savior, you should. And you need to align yourself and work together with people of like faith, because I'm of the opinion, the firm opinion, that in the absence of law and order, it will only be the God-fearing who are going to be law-abiding. And you want to be around God-fearing people. That's where your safety will be. Those will be the people you can trust. And that's where you geographically need to be as well.
Now, Jim, we've seen religious persecution of bakers, photographers, and florists. Do you think that could ever spill over into the church? And if so, do you recommend being involved in a home group and getting that started now before it's too late to even make those connections?
Yes, I think even people who are members of a really good church should have a home Bible study group and prayer group. And I also think that people ought to sit down with their church pastor and their church elders and discuss whether the time has come to have your church step away from 501c3 status. Because as time goes on, I think that the restrictions that go on in this nation on what individual pastors can present from their pulpits is going to change radically for churches that are still tax exempt. Because of fear of losing that tax-exempt status or even, civil fines or penalties or whatever, they're going to try to muzzle America's pastors. And the time has clearly come for us to step away from the beast system and to step away from 501c3 status so that our pastors can speak forthrightly without any fear of retribution and without any hesitation about what is morally correct and what is biblically correct. And if they're still beholden to our federal government for the sake of tax exemption, they're not going to have that freedom. So I think that's the most important next step for American people to make, is to sit down with their pastors and their elders and have them seriously and prayerfully consider getting away from 501c3. And then beyond that, we need to look toward a global age of persecution. And I don't want to reveal too much about the next series of books that I'm writing, but suffice it to say, it describes a future in which there's a lot less religious freedom. And people need to prepare for that. People need to be prepared also in the event of the advent of a cashless society and any demands that we carry around a debit card instead of cash, or even worse, that we all are all implanted with some kind of biochip in order to be able to buy or sell. People need to be prepared to barter. And it's only, again, if your family has the logistics, the beans, bullets, and band-aids, that you're going to be in a position to be ready to barter. And so that those supplies, that food storage, that common caliber ammunition, those precious metals that you've set aside will really serve double duty. They're there in the event of an economic collapse, but they're also there to help you transition into a sub rosa barter economy if that time ever comes.
And you mentioned the beast system, and there's some passage in the Bible that says for God's people to come out of Babylon. Do you think that it's possible that Babylon could be sort of the system that you just said, like the beast system? And do you think that that's possibly the directive, is for us to step away and to sort of develop this alternative market or economic system amongst ourselves?
Yes, I do. And I think that it's prudent to at least prayerfully examine that and takes at least some modest steps at this point to be ready for that. Every family should have a large stock of storage food. And along with that storage food, you should also have some smaller containers to be able to parcel some of that out. You know, if you got all your wheat, rice, and beans in 7-gallon super pails, that is not the most convenient for barter. So you want to have a very large quantity of plastic bags, Ziploc bags, for example, and smaller containers if you can find them. Look for canning jars at garage sales.
Canning jars are great, but you need lids because you can only use those one time.
Yeah, you'll need the lids and rings to go with those. And for hot pack canning, of course, you're going to need fresh lids that have never been used before in large quantity because with the exception of the Tatler brand lids, they're not reusable. So I do recommend people get a set of Tatler lids so you can reuse them again. And just plain lids, even once used lids that have been washed. So if you're going to be bartering dry pack goods, things like wheat, rice, and beans, you at least have a clean way to keep vermin away from small containers of food for at least a short period of time, because plastic bags are horrible at that. Think in terms of being ready to barter in terms of storage food, those small containers for your storage food, common caliber ammunition, which is kind of a de facto barter currency in and of itself, things like 22 long rifle, 45 automatic, 9mm, 40 Smith & Wesson, 308, 223, 7.62x39, maybe some 5.45 Russian, common caliber ammunition, and then small denomination silver coins that are recognizable and very unlikely to ever be copied by the crooks out there. There's a lot of fake Morgan silver dollars hitting the American market right now, for example, but nobody's faking well-worn 10-cent pre-1965 dimes or quarters. I mean, that's not something that there's any money in for people to counterfeit. So that's where you probably should be putting most of your money that you plan to have available for barter. You should put into well-circulated, what's commonly called junk silver, pre-1965, 90% silver, dimes and quarters, perhaps some half dollars.
Yeah, the only ones counterfeiting, that's the U.S. government. Now,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, they started counterfeiting those in 1965. And they're not making any more of them. So, yeah, stock up, folks.
Now, we talked about home groups. What about a home group crossing over as a mutual assistance group for survival? Do you think that makes sense? And if you're a prepper and you're in a home group and nobody else is really talking about it, would you recommend that person to take the initiative and bring up the subject and try to start talking about that in their home group?
Yes, I would, with the proviso that it has to be in a small group setting, probably not an entire church congregation unless you live in a very rural, salt-of-the-earth place, you know, someplace like North Idaho, for example. People talk about that in church all the time. But if you live in the suburbs, you don't want to broach that subject to your entire congregation, or you're going to label yourself as the local survivalist wacko. So if you have a independent, small home Bible study group, for example, that's an ideal place to bring up the subject of preparedness. And you can break it to people pretty gently. You know, you don't have to say, gee, we need to, you know, cross train everyone to be a special forces medic. Break that concept in slowly. You know, talk about the advantages of economies of scale for purchasing bulk foods, for example. If you buy rice in a 1-pound package, you're paying about 8 times as much per pound as you would buying rice in a 5 or 7 gallon plastic bucket. The unit cost savings just by themselves make buying in bulk advantageous. And if you can present that to a home church group or a home Bible study group and say, hey, folks, to save money on food and to give us extra food available to dispense as charity, what would we say we team up and we buy some foods in bulk and then split them up? You know, if we buy wheat in 2,000 or 3,000 pound lots and it all comes to us in 7-gallon super pails, and then we simply split that up amongst 10 or 12 families, you know, we each end up with some very inexpensive wheat that's well packaged. Present it to folks that way, and I think they'll see the wisdom of it. And then you can, you know, eventually bring up other subjects that relate to family preparedness. But I think that's an ideal venue to bring up those kind of topics. And it's also probably one of the safest places to bring up those topics and not end up targeting yourself.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today.
Essential oils offer a natural, chemical-free solution to so many of our daily needs. Oils can be used for just about anything, including fighting off bacteria, to de-stress, ward off bugs, relieve arthritis pain, and boost the immune system. Young Living Essential Oils offers the highest quality products and educational resources, so you'll learn what to use and how to use it. Go to livingalifeoflove.com. That's livingalifeoflove.com to order your starter kit today.
Yeah, our home group has been that we've been studying the Shemitah lately. So and then we've got we're on the East Coast, so we've got hurricane season rolling around. So it's kind of like the perfect time to really start talking about it amongst ourselves. So you know, there's a lot of things. And if you live in California or somewhere where it's prone to earthquakes, which we've been having some seismic activity around Yellowstone now, which has been something that's been on the radar for scientists for a while. And we've been having a lot of seismic activity. So especially if you're in an area that's prone to earthquakes, it's a great topic to bring up, you know, hurricane preparedness and earthquake preparedness and tornado preparedness. And then from there, you just keep building, right?
Sure. It's just common sense. And if you present it in the right way, you're not going to come off as some kind of wild-eyed fanatic. It's just prudent, biblically sound preparedness, and you can quote chapter and verse for, you know, where the Bible recommends saving up for the lean times. In fact, at my prayer page, again at survivalblog.com, in that left-hand column, click on prayer. There's some good biblical support for family preparedness, and be prepared with those verses for when you bring this subject up. Yeah. So that you can say, hey, this is just my opinion. This is just a good idea. This is God's good idea that was all spelled out in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's Proverbs 23 that says, in the house of the wise are stores of food and oil.
That's right. And the prudent man foreseeth the evil and hideth himself.
It's Proverbs 22:3. That might be.
Son is punished.
Yeah, that's Proverbs 22:3. That might be my life verse. I don't know. Before we let you go, can you give us three inexpensive tips for food storage?
Well, the first is, of course, buy in bulk. The second would be buy quality. And the third would be store it in a way that you're not going to lose it. And by that, I mean you need to store everything in a vermin-proof environment. And at my website and also in my book, How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It, I describe several different methods for producing an environment inside of a container that is free of oxygen, so that any bugs that are in there are going to die, and any eggs that they have laid in there are never going to hatch. It's crucial that people store things the right way, because there's nothing more heartbreaking than stocking a bunch of stuff away and then going to check on it 6 months later and finding out that either moths have hatched in it or that rats have gotten into it and eaten through the sides of the containers and made a horrible mess and rendered everything inedible. So store, you know, you want to buy in bulk, but store those foods wisely in a way that they're going to be there for you for many, many years to come. And of course, you want to date mark everything that you store and use first in, first out, what's called FIFO rotation of your stored foods. You're going to use up the oldest stuff first. And as things are nearing their expiration date, we as Christians need to think very seriously if we kind of overbought and we're not using up things rapidly enough before they're going to expire. We want to get those extra foods charitably into the hands of people who can use them before they are past their expiration date, because at that point, even the charities won't take them.
And some good things to store would be maybe rice, beans. You mentioned wheat, and now you have to buy the wheat whole, and then you need a grinder to grind that. Is that right?
Correct, yes. The storage life of hard red winter wheat is in excess of 30 years. But the storage life of flour from that same wheat is only 18 months or less. So you want to store the wheat whole, and you want to have a good quality grinder, and preferably one that you can hand crank and convert to machine, you know, electric driven. There's a couple of really good ones on the market. One is called the Wonder Mill Junior, and there's also the kind of the premier one that's now getting almost too expensive to afford is called the Country Living Grain Mill. Now, that's the one that we have here at our ranch, and thankfully I bought one of those 15 years ago when they were only about $200. They're now like $600 to buy one retail. It's a pretty expensive mill, but you can look at it as a once-in-a-lifetime expense. And, of course, if you have a good quality mill that's set up for, you know, large-scale production, you'll probably end up grinding wheat not just for yourself but for your whole neighborhood. You can have your neighbors over and they can grind their wheat without fear of wearing the thing out. So get a really good quality grain mill.
That's fantastic. What about sugar, honey?
They store almost indefinitely. Sugar and honey and molasses, for example, will store many, many years. You just want to make sure that you're going to store them in an environment where they're not going to draw any moisture or have any exposure for oxidation or certainly not for pests getting into them. They store a tremendously long time. In terms of bulk foods, things like spaghetti will store 10 or 15 years. There's some limitations on things like dried beans, for example. Beans tend to get harder and drier as time goes on, and they really only have a shelf life of between 6 and 9 years before they get so hard and so dry that no amount of soaking is ever going to reanimate them. The only way that you can get beans that are 7 or 8 or 9 years old back into an edible state is with a pressure cooker or by grinding them up into the consistency of flour to be able to cook them into a paste. So things like beans, you need to think very seriously about rotating once every 5 years. But your wheat, for example, 30 years. Your rice, as long as it's white rice, 12 plus years. Brown rice, you can usually, depending on your climate, can store from anywhere from 2 years to 6 years. If you live in a hot climate, there is the problem of rancidity in brown rice in a hot climate. So if you live in the South or you don't have any cool storage for your rice, I would recommend, even though the nutritive value isn't nearly as good, that you store white rice instead.
And then I think you recommend salt on the survival blog, stocking up on salt.
I'm a big believer in salt for many reasons. You know, you're going to need it for your diet. You're going to need it to preserve a lot of foods, and especially if you're preserving foods in an environment where you don't have electricity every day, you're going to end up storing a lot more things with salt. And one thing that a lot of people overlook is you're going to want to have salt on hand for your livestock and to attract wild game so that you don't have to go hunting for deer, deer come hunting for you. You want to stock up on some salt blocks.
And do you recommend iodized salt for consumption for stockpiling?
Yes, I do. And depending on where you live, the salt blocks you should buy might end up being selenium blocks. You can check with your local veterinarian or even your local feed store to ask if the soil in your region is deficient in selenium. If it is, you're going to want to be buying the brown selenium blocks.
Great, great advice. Now, we mentioned the Patriots books, and you gave us a little teaser about your new series coming out, and I guess we'll have to get you back fall to talk about that. Now, you also write some nonfiction, right?
Yes, I just had a nonfiction book, my second one from Penguin, come out this last year, late in December of 2014. My book, Tools for Survival, came out. That was primarily a digest of articles from Survival Blog. And that followed my first book from Penguin, which was called How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It. Those are both in print and available very widely. And, of course, I have my five-book Patriot series. And then starting in November of 2015, my new series of books that's also fiction. It's a series of novels that's also going to be set in the future, but it's a different storyline from the Patriot series. The first book in that series is called Land of Promise. That'll be coming out the 21st of November 2015. Again, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but suffice it to say, it'll be an exciting read. It'll have a lot of practical content in it, like the Patriot series, but it'll definitely get people thinking about what the world will really be like for Christians in 30 years.
Fantastic. Thanks for all the great advice. And then one more time, can you just tell everybody where your website is?
Yes, it is survivalblog.com.
Jim,
people can also find it just by searching on my family name, which is Rawles, Rawles.
And then we'll have links to the Survival Blog in the show notes today, and we'll have links to the Patriot series and some of your other books. So, Jim, thank you so much for taking time to come back on the show, and we'll talk to you this fall so we can hear a little bit more about this new series, because now you've got everybody's taste buds wet.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Mark, and God bless you and all your listeners.
In the Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution by best-selling author Mark Goodwin. A globalist conspiracy transpires by way of a false flag attack against America's energy infrastructure. Noah and Cassandra Parker witness a complete economic meltdown, which is intentionally triggered by the event. The assault is blamed on patriots and Christians who are rounded up into detention centers across the country. Noah and his friends must take action to prepare for the meltdown and defend against the totalitarian regime, which is gunning for their freedom and, quite possibly, their very lives. Get your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 2, Persecution for Kindle, paperback, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.